Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Melanie, I'm tired.
Me too.
I thought like weekends we were supposed to be able to sleep in. I think that's not a parent thing, I guess.
That's not a parent thing. That's for like single people,
I guess. Oh, or parents of older kids, like once they've moved. I had to get up, well, I mean, half hour earlier on Saturday and Sunday. I'll explain why in a bit. It'll come out as we talk about what we've been doing. But let's start with what we've been doing. On Friday, so this is the third Friday in a row where you've been able to, this Friday I couldn't go because I had to work, I had work stuff. But where you've been able to take the kids someplace. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I made it a personal commitment for this summer to try to get out. Last summer, last spring, we started off with doing all sorts of like outings and nature hikes and stuff. And then it got hot. And I guess I got really sort of overwhelmed with COVID stuff. Like, I don't even remember. It just seemed like suddenly the summer was gone and we'd not done much of anything. So I decided that this summer was going to be different. And now that Isabella is finally finished with all of her official high school stuff for her freshman year, she's still doing some summer stuff like we talked about last week. But this leaves our schedule a lot more free. So I've decided that Friday is field trip day. If the weather is looking like it's going to be especially bad on Friday, I might move it up in the week. But I'm determined that we're going to have at least one outing a week.
You know what we've got to check is the Museum of Fine Arts. The thing that holds us back from going to the Museum of Fine Arts is not the museum being open, which it is, but whether the cafeteria is open, because we need to feed the children during our visit, and the only place to do that effectively is in their cafeteria. So we need to figure out if that's open, because I really have a hankering to go back to the museum.
So do I.
It's been so long.
Although we will also have to buy a new membership, which isn't cheap.
Right. Well, yeah. But, I mean, we would have had to do that. That's the budget. We budget for that every year. We let ours lapse this year because we haven't been. But
I'm kind of sad that they're not going to give a discount for people who were previously members who didn't really get to use their membership last year. But
they
did, actually.
But they kept extending it. I mean, they've been open for a while. We just haven't gone.
Right.
Because of the cafeteria thing.
Yeah, we missed the advantage, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just the way it is. But in any case, this is the MFA. But so I wanted to talk about where you went this week.
Oh,
though.
Right. We went to a place that we first discovered, actually.
We talked about it last
spring.
Yeah.
We went to Wallamanapoag, which is a nature reserve in Wrentham.
Yes.
I think it's in Wrentham.
Yeah.
And it's really a lovely place. Wallamanapoag, their primary attraction is that beavers have dammed up a stream and flooded this marshland so that I think it was already a wetland before the beavers came. I mean, probably, obviously. But they've dammed up the stream and they've created this big pond where there's lots and lots of dead trees, and herons have formed a colony in the dead trees. So there are more than a dozen, maybe 20, maybe two dozen nests with herons in them. It's astounding. Now, they're on the far side of the pond from where you are, like as you're observing them. But still pretty cool.
For those who've been listening for a while, we talked about it last year when you went.
Right, we did.
Yeah.
So we actually discovered it last year in early spring, like when it was first sort of.
It was still somewhat, it was still early. Yeah, somewhat chilly. Wasn't quite.
Right.
Yeah.
So we had really nice weather on Friday for going on a hike. it was cool and overcast, but not rainy, really. It drizzled on us a couple of times, like just a little tiny mist, not rain. And the weather was lovely. The herons were squawking. And
so halfway through, Bella was telling me that she and Sophie, there was like a Boy Scout camping area or something like that.
There was an area that with a big fire ring that looks like not so much camping, but like maybe a place where you'd have a bonfire and tell stories and stuff.
So they got up on this makeshift stage and started doing Hamilton.
They did. they were singing their way through as much of the Hamilton repertoire as mostly they could King remember. George. It was fun.
That is good. Good.
Yeah, it was a really nice outing. We packed a lunch and we made a longish day of it. Perfect.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Like you left about noon, a little before noon, and you were back like around 3:34.
Yeah, it's about a 45-minute drive from here. So, you know, like an hour and a half of driving plus I think we did about 2 hours of hiking.
It's a 2-mile loop. You went halfway.
We did not have a map or a trail guide, so we just sort of, and last time we had done maybe about half of the loop going in one direction, but we'd done like almost nothing going the other direction. So we decided to sort of reverse directions and go the other way that we hadn't gone before. And when I got home, I actually looked in a map and I realized that we'd gone about halfway around the loop, according to my watch. So if we had just kept going, we would have taken about the same amount of time to get back to the parking lot. But the mosquitoes were out in force and Anthony was having a hard time, and it seemed like the better part was to turn around and
right.
So maybe next time though, our third time's the charm. We'll try to do the whole loop, knowing that it's only 2 miles. And hopefully next time you'll come.
So then after you guys got back, after we had dinner, then it was time for our pack meeting for our Cub Scout pack, which is the first real pack meeting we've had in over a year at the church where we're supposed to meet. This was an outdoor pack meeting, though. It was a campfire pack meeting. And all the kids went. So Bella, Sophie, and Ben, even though they're not in the pack, went, and then Anthony and Lucy, and it was good. They had songs. All the kids got up, and all our kids were willing to jump in and sing and do things. Like the girls, the troop, the older girl troop, had prepared a song to sing because they have to do a campfire song as part of their advancement stuff, and so they sang a song, and then Anthony and Lucy joined in another one where they were singing along with it being led by Chris, you know, who's the song master. So that was fun.
Chris is the song master.
Yes, he's got all the scout songs, like every scout campfire song. He's got it all memorized. He did the Grand Old Duke of York.
Oh, that's a fun one.
Yes, and it's, you got to like jump up, and then when you're up, you're up.
When you're down, you're down.
And you squat down, and yeah, did the whole thing.
So basically sneaky calisthenics.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. And they had a flag retirement ceremony, which was good. And then we did s'mores, and the kids were all, that's, frankly, that's why they all went.
Right. Ben was like, I don't know that I want to go. There's s'mores?
There'll be s'mores.
I'm totally there. He was just there for the s'mores.
He was there for the s'mores. Yeah, there are two kinds of kids with the s'mores. There's the kind who gently toast the marshmallow. And then there are the kids who are like Lord of the Flies, napalm torches running around through the woods. So, yeah. So that was good, the pack meeting. Then the first early morning for me was Saturday morning, because the older girls, their troop, was going to a place called Breezy Picnic Grounds. I'd never heard of it, but Chris, who's their scoutmaster.
The name is misleading.
Yeah, it's like a lake. I'm not even like altogether certain all that it is, but there's water slides, like the loopy water slides that you can go on. There's a snack bar. There's a lake there. I'm not sure what else there was there, but
the main thing was the water slides.
Yeah. So they all went down. I didn't go. They went with they traveled down with the troop, and they had fun. But they had to meet at 7:30 at the church where the troop meets. So I had to be up at 6 to get them to get my shower and get them going. And it was like early. I mean, Sophie was up at 4 as she usually is.
Yes, she was.
She's up at 4 every day, and then. They had a blast. They'd never been on water slides before, so they were all raving about it. But the poor kids got their sunburns. I gave them the SPF 50 sunscreen. I did give it to them, made sure they had it. She said, even with that, we got in the car, she's like, oh, sunscreen. I'm like, oh, yeah, let me grab it. I grabbed it, handed it to her.
I think what happened is what often happens. It was a cloudy day, like Friday was. And it was not hot and there was a breeze. And so they didn't feel warm. They didn't feel like they were burning. And it probably didn't help that I don't think the adults were very aware either, because Chris, the scoutmaster, he had quite a burn on his face, too.
Right.
So I'm thinking that the adults didn't put on sunscreen themselves and forgot to remind the kids. Right. I'm going to say this is a dual failure of.
Yeah.
Of scouts and leadership.
I guess it's kind of expensive. Like, it's $23 for, it's three different water slides and then a pond and a snack bar where you have to buy stuff. Like, that's kind of expensive, I have to say. Like, there's no way we could go with all of our family. Like, if we went, that's like $125.
Right.
No, it's way more than that. It's like $170. Yeah, this is not even a possibility for us.
Okay, you guys are lucky you get to go.
Right, right. That's one of the reasons why I sent them with them. I'm like, I didn't want to spend $23 so I could sit around and not do anything. But, yeah. But they had fun. I'm glad they went. That was good. Poor Sophie's still burned. The poor thing.
Oh, yeah. She's really burned.
But they'll get by. The lesson learned. And then, but meanwhile, we went to the farmer's market and to by the beach, and that was nice. Just the three of them, the three other kids. It was good. We had a good time. Yeah, that's about it. And then today we just kind of hung out. I was just exhausted because I had to get up early today, too, because I had to take the boys to an earlier mass. I'll talk about that in a minute, but I just needed a rest. I got a long week coming up, so... in fact, this coming Friday is another outing we're going to do. We're going to go on a boat Boston Harbor Islands with the scouts. So that's going to be
that. Fun. I will count that as our weekly outing.
Oh, you better.
I'm not. I don't think I'm going to do two things. That's going to be the thing.
That's a major trip. We still got to figure out the logistics of parking. Either we're going to park in the city or we're going to take a train into the city. I don't know. Parking in the city, parking for us is an issue because of the van. The van is just huge. And so it doesn't fit in all garages. You have to be careful about, where you go. It's just
it doesn't fit in most garages.
Right. So it's a logistical thing you got to just be aware of ahead of time. If you're ever thinking about getting a big van, that's one of the things you have to consider. That's for sure. So, yeah, that's what we've been doing. I mean, it kind of sounds like a lot, but it wasn't really that much. Just those 3 days. 2 days of things, really. The rest of the week was
the rest of the week was appointments. I had an appointment, a doctor's appointment, every day of the week except Friday.
Right. For one of the kids, yeah.
And one of the days, I think there was two different appointments on that day. So it was, for me, yeah. it was a busy, busy week.
A combination of in-person and telehealth.
Right. Yeah, some of them were telehealth. A couple were in-person, but... Yeah.
We're getting back to that, sadly, having to go to the doctor's
office.
Well,
you know, also, there are some things that can't be done on telehealth.
Right, right. The
tests and stuff that require in person.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about what we've been eating. So last week, earlier in the week, I think it was Wednesday, we had, I was meaning to make this recipe of potato and chorizo tacos. So I had this chorizo in the freezer from last summer. I got it from from the farmer's market. And I've been trying to think of something to make with it. And I had seen somewhere online someone talking about potatoes and chorizo tacos are a thing. They go well together. I'm like, okay, I'm going to make that. I kind of messed up because you're supposed to cook the potatoes and the sausage simultaneously in two different pans. And I didn't realize that until I was like, until the potatoes were halfway done. So I started the sausage, and the sausage was cooked, but it's supposed to like dry out, and it wasn't dried out. It was really, it was like the, it was still kind of greasy, and the potatoes were overcooked.
I don't think it would have dried out anymore. It felt really dry to me. I think the problem was it just needed something to absorb the grease.
Yeah. Yeah, the potatoes, I think the potatoes are supposed to absorb more of the grease than they did, but like I said, the potatoes were, like, some of them were a little burned and overcooked, and it was just, I can see it could taste good, but if I do it again, make a chorizo taco, it's going to be a breakfast taco.
I confess, chorizo is not my favorite sausage.
Yeah.
So
there's andouille in there, you know.
Also,
not your favorite.
I like andouille in like a gumbo or a jambalaya, but
I want to make a jumbo or a jambalaya.
Yeah, jambalaya.
Jambalaya, not jambalaya.
Jambalaya, I love, but it's way too much rice at one meal. I can't do that anymore.
Right.
Like, just my digestive system does not like that much rice.
Right. I'm not supposed to eat that much rice either.
So, like, I love jambalaya, but it's, and it used to be a staple. Like, we would eat it all the time. But I mean, I think the andouille might work okay for a gumbo. Gumbo, you could serve on top of rice, but you don't have to have the rice.
Right. Right. That's true. Yeah. I think, I want to make a gumbo. Back in college, I made this gumbo recipe from, it was called Dr. Jim's Gumbo Supreme. It had everything in it. It had chicken, it had sausage, it had crab, it had shrimp. I mean, it had everything. It was pretty darn good. It took a while to make. It was like an all-day sort of thing. But I made
it. Good gumbo takes time.
Yeah. When I made it, I had like a big pot and invited all my friends over. It was a lot of fun. It was good. So, next time. So then, Friday, our plan was to have these Middle Eastern chicken skewers with toum. So toum is it's a Middle Eastern, the closest thing I could compare it to is mayonnaise. It's got oil, it's got egg, it's an emulsion, but it's a lot of garlic. It's a very garlicky flavor.
It's like super garlicky mayonnaise.
Right. And then if you mix it with yogurt, it's like a tzatziki, you know, that sort of spread or sauce. It's very airy, very light,
very fluffy,
very fluffy. And so this was like chicken skewers with, I'm trying to find it here. I got the recipe in front of me somewhere.
It had like tomato paste and paprika,
lemon juice, paste, coriander, paprika, olive oil. And then you marinate it for at least 3 hours, up to 12 hours. And then you skewer it, grill it, and then you cook some cherry tomatoes and Kalamata olives with olive oil and garlic and salt and pepper, and you kind of roast those in a pan on the grill just to give them a little char a little bit, and then you serve it on bread. That was the idea. So
with like pita bread.
With pita bread or naan, which is what I had.
Yeah.
So we were going to do that Friday, except I was still working when you started getting ready. The thing ready, and I'm like, oh yes, there's the chicken thighs are in the freezer, so use those.
Well, also, you didn't look at the recipe to determine that
it requires 3 hours
of marinade. Because if you had, then you would have said, well, that's not for tonight because we had
I would have done it earlier at lunchtime or something.
A lot less than 3 hours when I started.
Yeah, it was like 45 minutes because we had to go to the pack meeting. So that was the first thing. I'm like, well, maybe we'll just kind of get away with like half an hour of it. And then I come out to help you. I finally get my work done. I come out and I look at the counter and like you've defrosted bone in, skin on chicken thighs.
You said the chicken thighs are in the freezer.
I know. I assumed you looked at the recipe on the in the paprika app, which is my mistake. I should have specified. We had both boneless chicken thighs and bone-in chicken thighs in the freezer, and you get that idea in your head, and you just think, well, obviously, this is what I'm thinking. Why didn't you do the thing I'm thinking?
Why can't you read my mind?
Yes, right. Oh, my gosh. So it was like, we
I
like,
never do that to you.
Yes, you never do that. So we're standing there staring at, like, you've got the marinade made, we've got defrosted, mostly half defrosted chicken thighs, like they're still
right,
kind of
like
frozen.
This is not a recipe that's going to come together, and right. yet,
and we have to leave in an hour or something. Like right. it's like this is not going to work. It's not going to happen. So, oh my gosh. So, ended up, what did I do? I just tossed everything. Like I tossed the chicken into like several Ziploc bags. And then we put the tomb that she'd already made and the marinade in containers and just shoved it in the fridge, and we had
tuna salad
for dinner.
Which if I had realized that it was a 3-hour marinade process, I would have just found something else. Like I would have done a simpler chicken skewer that didn't require
right, or just roasted the chicken thighs in the oven, baked them or something. Yeah. It just goes to show, like, we our plans don't always come together. So on Saturday, I got up after I got back from taking the girls. I got the chicken out again. It was fully defrosted. I boned it, you know, removed the skin, trimmed it, the fat off, sliced it up, put it in the marinade, and then put it in the fridge so that it could marinate all day, which was frankly better than it would have been if we'd only done a 1/2-hour marinade.
Yeah.
So when we made it, it was pretty good.
I liked the flavors. I really liked the Kalamata olive cherry tomato
yes.
idea. And I liked the naan, like chicken in naan with the tomatoes and the olives and the tomb sauce. That was all really good. The chicken was a little on the dry side.
Yeah.
And
I think it was my mistake. I overcooked it.
I think it was just overcooked. I don't think it was a problem with the marinade.
Yeah.
But the flavors were good.
Yeah. Yeah. I would try it again. I think I like the idea of putting the things together. Again, this is a theme that we keep coming back to is the kids like meals where they have to assemble the ingredients. So.
Right.
Yeah. So that was good. And then today I made barbecue ribs. And I like making the barbecue ribs. Everybody likes the ribs, although they didn't eat as many of them as I thought
they were. They were not very hungry at dinner. I don't think it was that they didn't like the ribs. They just weren't very hungry.
Yeah.
Which is weird because I don't think that they ate lunch. Well,
they had pancakes. After you guys got back from Mass, right. I made pancakes because I was able to get those done. But they didn't have like a lot of other food. They didn't have like any other protein.
Right.
Yeah, it was weird. But anyway. I like making the ribs, but it's one of those things. It's hard to make them because they have to be made on a day that's not raining. Because I can't use the grill in the rain. It just like I have a Weber, you know, kettle grill. I don't have a real smoker, so I've got to use it in the good weather, which means I've got to plan several days in advance. And the ribs, I've had the ribs in the freezer forever, but they're frozen, and so I need to like figure out. I need to cook these in a week from today. I need to take them out of the freezer, get them to defrost, then get them wrapped.
And you don't have time most weeknights.
Right. And then I have to, get the rub on 24 to 48 hours in advance, that whole thing. So I did that also on Saturday morning was I got the rub on. I used a new rub that I got. This guy is this famous barbecue guy named Meathead something or other. I forget his whole name.
But Meathead?
Meathead. And the rub is his Memphis Dust, and it's actually a really good rub. Actually, I think it was really tasty. And so I got that on there and was able to get it on the grill. I'm gonna use the Weber. I need the rib racks that stand them up instead of laying them down because they were kind of laying on top of each other. If they're upright, they're gonna get drier. They're gonna get more bark formation. I think. Because they aren't that barky, the way I make the ones that I made today. And then I made a barbecue sauce to go with it, which I kind of like. It's a standard ketchup, molasses sauce, kind of oniony. But we had bought some barbecue sauce, North Carolina style barbecue sauce, at the farmer's market. Yes, so this guy happened to be selling it, and it was good. I don't think it's good for the ribs. I think we agreed.
Yeah, I think it would be really good for like a pulled pork, which is more Carolina style anyway.
Right, right. So next time we do the pulled pork, we'll definitely do that. So ribs were good. They'll be good tomorrow, and probably even better. And you made a coleslaw.
I did.
Yeah, that was good. So, but it was hard to figure out what else to, like, they completely ignored the basket of bread. Like, the really awesome loaf of bread we got at the market. Like,
which is just as well, because I have plans to make bruschetta out of it tomorrow. So
you have plans.
Bruschetta. We got tomatoes from the farmer's market. I've got some basil. I'm going to toast the bread, rub it with garlic, and top it with bruschetta, tomatoes, sauce, and it's going to be awesome.
You may as well use up all those tomatoes, because the lettuce mix is toast. So it got frozen in the back of the fridge, and once lettuce freezes, it's no good.
You can cook
lettuce.
If you mix it with some heartier greens, like as one of a mix of greens,
plenty of radish greens out in the garden.
Right. Lettuce can actually be pretty good. If you don't want to over saute it, you want to just like barely wilt it.
Yeah.
It can work.
Well, we'll see. I'll let you do that one. That's yours.
Yeah.
So that's what we've been cooking. Let's talk about what we've been reading or watching. I want to mention that I watched the first episode of season 7 of Bosch, which is on Amazon Prime. It's a detective series based on a series of books. I forget the author of the books, but you know, this Los Angeles detective, this homicide detective. It's a really good series. Titus Welliver plays the main character, Bosch. It's the final season, so I'm curious where they're going with it. And so far, so good. Very interesting. He has a daughter in like 7 seasons. The first season, she was a kid. Now she's like this grown, you know, college student, and they have her like doing adult stuff, like sleeping over her boyfriends. And I'm like, that's kind of, that makes me feel weird to see this girl who was a kid, you know, they're now putting her in adult situations. Like, I don't like that. I don't like when TV show characters like grow up and then they start acting like adults. I know kids grow up. I have to deal with it, but it's really weird. She reminds me a lot of the Castle's daughter.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. A lot like her. Anyway, so that's good. I watched the first episode. They dropped the whole season at once. They still do that at Amazon Prime. But I saw someone that was like, they dropped it on Friday night or Saturday morning. Someone was like, oh my gosh, season 7's the best. I'm like, do you have a life besides sitting and watching 12 and a half hours or whatever it was of Bosch? I mean, wow. Like, that's a binge.
Anyway, that's a binge.
That is a binge. I also watched Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, last week.
Uh-huh.
For our discussion of for Secrets of Star Trek. I hadn't seen that in a long time. And it is such... Jimmy says it's the best Star Trek movie, which is an interesting... most people say Star Trek The Wrath of Khan is the best, but Star Trek VI is really good. It's a very much a product of its time, because it is about detente. It's about the end of the Cold War. It's about Glasnost, you know, that whole thing.
Wow.
I mean, the Klingon Chancellor is Gorkon, not Gorbachev, Gorkon. You know, it's like... so there's a lot of good stuff in there. It's really interesting. So it was, but the best part is Captain Von Trapp as a Klingon quoting Shakespeare, "Cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war," as he fires at the Enterprise. I mean, it's surreal. Let me tell you, watching that Captain Von Trapp. Anyway, so
I have to say, this was one of those weeks where I'd finished Project Hail Mary, and then this was a week where I just, like, I picked up books and started them and read little bits and pieces here and there, but didn't make significant progress on anything. I was just, you know, sometimes you get that, like, you finish a book and you're looking for something else and nothing's quite right.
Yeah.
I read, like, half of a book and was like, I just don't really like this. And then I picked up other things and just like, it's one of those weeks.
But you've been reading a book to the boys for their bedtime reading. It sounds interesting. We had an interesting discussion at lunch today about it.
Oh, right. This is a book I bought. No, I actually checked out from the library last year or the year before that Isabella really liked. It's called The Code Book, and it's a history of cryptography. and it's not a kid's book. I mean, I think there was actually a sort of young reader's version, which is what I had originally got out from the library. But when I decided that Isabella liked it enough that I wanted to add it to our library, I ended up getting the adult version. So this is a dense book written for adults. It's not really a kid's book.
And yet it's bedtime reading for the boys.
But the boys are loving it. It's very well written. It's very engaging.
It's a narrative to it. There's stories.
Right. It's sort of like the history of cryptography. Therefore, it's like the stories of different people and different moments in history. So right now we're reading about the Enigma machine. I mean, this is really exciting stuff, you know.
World War II.
Yeah. Before that, we were reading about the Zimmerman telegram in World War I, and Ben surprised me because he actually remembered something about it from our history reading some time ago.
Cool.
So it's a really engaging book. There's a lot of technical stuff that I'm thinking as I'm reading it out loud. There is no way these two boys are going to be following this. I'm barely following it. And there's lots of diagrams and pictures and, you know, look at 35A and then look at 35B and then look at 35C, you know, the diagrams and stuff.
But they're enjoying it. But they asked for it.
They really are enjoying it. And they're responding to it and they're remembering it and talking about it. So it's been a great read aloud.
Bella had picked it up at lunchtime today, just, you know, to...
Right, because she had read the like I said, the shorter version previously, so she was kind of, like, remembering, rereading bits and pieces, and not
talking about encryption, about cybersecurity, cryptocurrency, about wiretaps, and government surveillance, and Echelon, and all this stuff like this. It was a very good discussion, and it's the sort of thing I'm like, this is the sort of stuff I want to make sure that I pass on to them, like understanding of how the world works, how to communicate with people securely, like sending an email in the clear is like sending a postcard. Anybody who that postcard passes by can read it. So never put anything in an email that is sensitive, like a social security number or a credit card number or anything like that. You know, these are the sorts of basic lessons about life that I want to make sure that they're getting. And that was the opportunity to talk about some of that. Right.
And, you know, it's the kind of book that it doesn't fit neatly within a particular academic discipline or subject area. And so it's the kind of thing that a teacher might have a harder time. Like, it's kind of it's mathy, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. It's math. It's history.
And it's history. But it's a little bit of everything.
Civics.
And so it's the kind of book that it's really fun and I love digging into. I would have a very hard time though sitting down and reading it from cover to cover myself. Like, I'm actually probably going to read it more of it than I would have if I just picked it up on my own.
Well, that's something to say for doing read alouds. Doing a read aloud, I think, can lead you to read things that you wouldn't otherwise read.
Definitely. And sort of to, you know, my own interest level might kind of wane at some of the more technical stuff, but because the boys are sort of there, no, go on, don't stop. Then it pulls me through a little bit.
Can you imagine if they all became little like cybersecurity experts and we had like this family cybersecurity firm? That would be awesome.
Yeah.
There's a lot of jobs right now in cybersecurity, encryption, all that sort of stuff. Like, I was reading that there's like there's a need for 100,000 additional experts in cybersecurity that are unfilled.
I have to say, I keep thinking of the Neal Stephenson novels, Cryptonomicon, and then its prequel, The Baroque Cycle, which are really, really good novels. Not kid friendly in that there's a lot of adult content in addition to, but the Baroque Cycle is basically Stevenson tracing the science of cryptography back to the Baroque era. And then he's very interested in sort of the connection between the development of computers and the development of cryptography. And then seeing it, the cryptocurrency is sort of the culmination of this. Mm. And he's got all these characters who...
I am biting my tongue, not making a Baroque joke.
Ha ha ha, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Oh, That's my joke.
I stole it.
Oh my gosh. Treading into my area.
But I read the Baroque Cycle when I was in the hospital for Lucy's birth. So it's been a while. And fun stuff. But not something I can hand off to the kids. So I'm just kind of.
Yeah. So the other thing we watched together was episode 3 of the Loki series, which was good. It's funny. I was listening to Father Roderick talk about it. He said, oh, it was the most action-packed episode. Like so far, and I thought this was the talkiest episode. I mean, there's action in it.
It's very talky,
but I thought it was very talky, which is interesting. It's very different.
I mean, there were I suppose in terms of like there being sort of dramatic conflict and
people fighting,
yeah. and running, you know, this sort of run because stuff is happening.
Doctor Who running through quarters.
Right. There was a significant amount of that.
Yeah.
But it was sort of the punctuation to all the talking.
Yeah. Yeah. It is funny. But so I'm not like there was some stuff revealed. We're trying to do this spoiler free. So it's not, I'm not sure how much we can talk about it. But there was stuff revealed about the characters, about the main antagonist, about Loki himself, and about the TVA, the Time Variant Authority.
A little bit about the Time Variant Authority.
The little bit of revelation of they're not created ex nihilo by the Timekeepers.
Oh, yeah, there was that, I suppose.
That's a little bit of a spoiler, but not too much. I don't know. It felt much more like setting the scene, like setting up what's coming next. It felt like a transitional episode. Yeah,
definitely.
So it'll be interesting to see where we go from there.
I have to say, it is interesting to see it like episode by episode. This is the experience of everyone who was like watching WandaVision or Falcon and Winter Soldier as they were dropping episode by episode. Because I binged both of those series.
Right.
And I just watched them boom, 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 boom. Like in 2 days and I was
done.
It's
very much a throwback experience. It goes back to where, like, we remember watching Lost? And every week we had to wait for the next episode and we had to speculate about it and everyone was talking about it. We listened to the podcast with Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse and them talking about the episode. I mean, it's an experience that got lost, no pun intended, lost for a long time with streaming. Right. And binging.
I have to say, I mean, I did miss details in WandaVision that I think things I might have caught if I had been watching more slowly and pondering.
Yes.
On the other hand, I'm also finding myself really wanting with Loki to be able to jump to the next episode. And I have a feeling that when it's done, I'm going to want to sit down and watch all the episodes back to back, because there is something to be said. Like you do forget things. Stuff.
That's the big thing is.
So you remember things better, but you also forget things more, like both at the same time. So you kind of almost need to do both.
Right. I just heard a really interesting rumor this week. I saw an article that the rumor is for Star Wars that the Book of Boba Fett, which is the next Star Wars streaming series that's due out in December, is actually almost going to be like Mandalorian season 3, because it's going to include not just Boba Fett in Fennec, who we saw in the trailer, but Din himself, Grogu, who'll be back, Luke Skywalker, and maybe even Grand Admiral Thrawn.
I got to take this one at a time because I have huge reactions for all of them. One, the idea that we're going to continue the storyline from The Mandalorian is really exciting to me. I mean, I have to say, Book of Boba Fett.
There's still going to be a Mando season 3.
Right. Book of Boba Fett is like a closed book. Like, I have no idea what kind of plot they could be going for there. I still don't really know much more by saying it's going to have, you know, all these characters in it, but it does give a little bit more sense of some possible arcs.
If you had watched The Bad Batch, there's something in The Bad Batch that leads me to believe that it will connect.
Right. I have to say, my biggest excitement, though, is the possibility of Thrawn.
Yes.
I'm, like, jumping up and down my seat. Like, I'm giddy, like, at the thought. I love Thrawn. The books have made him so interesting.
Right.
And I want to know what happens next, because, like, we don't know.
Right.
Because at the end of Rebels, he's
cast off into some distant part of the galaxy.
What happened to him?
With the Purrgil.
Where has he been? What Is he going to come back as an antagonist?
Right.
Like, is he still going to be the Archimate? Or are we going to parlay some of the sympathy which Timothy Zahn has given us in the books and make him maybe something a little bit more complex?
Yeah.
Either way, I mean, I would be happy either way. Like, if he is the arch-antagonist, that would be okay. Although I'm kind of rooting for him to be, like, something more.
Something a little more complex.
More complex.
Yeah. Well, frankly, I think that makes him a more interesting villain. An interesting villain is the one who's not just all bad guy, but is someone who is got sympathetic aspects. That makes him much, you know, I mean, sure, Palpatine, he's evil incarnate through and through, which is fine, but sometimes, I don't know. I'm trying to think of
I mean, it definitely is a different sort of story.
Yeah.
Than, like, the original Star Wars was very literally black and white.
Literally black and white, yeah.
But the new Star Wars is much more complex.
Yeah.
And in a way, I feel like, yeah, you're kind of, it's changing the game. It's a different thing. And I can understand why some people might be kind of sad. But I really like it.
Mm. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's what I've been watching mostly and a little bit of reading. I'm in the middle of the new Tom Clancy novel. I'm actually near the end of it. So, and that's been really good. But I'll talk about that next time because I'm sure I'll be done by then.
Right.
All right. Let's finish off by talking about our Sunday. So as I mentioned earlier, we were splitting masses. You took the girls for our regular mass at 10:30 at St. Edith Stein. I took Ben, and Anthony got up early to go with us to the 7:30 at the parish that's actually that we live in, its geographical bounds, at St. Joseph's. And the reason for that is because Ben is not vaccinated yet, he still has to wear a mask. And with the asthma and the mask and the heat, that's the big thing. It just makes it really difficult for him to sit through mass in an air-conditioned church.
He's been struggling a lot.
So we thought we'd have a little sympathy for him and give him a break. And we ended up going to, so I took him to the air conditioned church and our old church. And I got a good reminder of why we have a new church.
Yeah.
So we got there and then the priest comes in. There's no music. And he says, you know, he's got like 5 minutes of announcements. Like he goes on and on. And, one of the things he mentions is because it's the heat of the summer, we're doing our summer form of mass. And so we're eliminating the music. And apparently he doesn't say it, but they eliminate the hallelujah, Gloria and the creed, which I'm not sure that you're allowed to omit the creed on Sundays, but he admitted it. And then a short homily. And I'm like, we're in an air-conditioned church.
One of the few air-conditioned churches in the area.
Right. Why do you need to do a short mass in an air-conditioned... Like, it's like, you spend 5 minutes explaining this. It takes a minute to do each of the prayers. Like, I don't understand. And then...
Maybe because the other parish in the collaborative doesn't have air conditioning. They decided to do a short summer service, but they didn't distinguish between.
It makes no sense.
Were they afraid that everybody would flock to
No, you know exactly why. Because Father Kelly wanted to get in and out as fast as possible. The two priests. You know, I've known Father Kelly for more than 30 years, like 35 years. He was the priest for our youth group in my home parish when I was a kid. So I've known him for a long time. And yeah, I'm trying to say it in the most charitable way possible. He wanted to get in and out quickly. That's the ideal is to in and out, do the basics, get it done, and move on. They've had no confessions at the either parish for over a year. You can call and make an appointment. There's no confessions, he said, because the diocese won't allow them to be in a small room with people, whether they're vaccinated or not, which is baloney, frankly, because then do it in the nave of the church.
which is what all the other parishes we've been going to have been doing or for confessions.
Do it outdoors when the weather permits. And if someone calls to make an appointment, where are you going to have that confession? You're either going to do it in the small room or in the nave of the church or in the, like, so why not just have scheduled confessions in the area where people would schedule it to come and do it? Like, people, do you remember the time you had, you tried to call and make an appointment for confession and they said, just come on Saturday during the.
And I was calling because Saturday wouldn't come, but was not a time that would work for us. And that all they would give me was, well, just come on Saturday. That's when our confession time was.
Even though the bulletin says, you know, come out to the confession time or call and make an appointment.
Anyway,
yeah,
there are reasons why we switched. There are many, many reasons why we were going to a different parish.
I was remembering lots of reasons why. So you went to our regular parish.
A regular parish. We had one of our regular
visiting
priests.
Yeah.
Father Pinto.
Father Pinto's kind of famous, you know.
I know. He's
from the Father Peyton Prayer Center.
Yes.
People know him, I guess. Like, it's funny thing. Like, priests who have a bit of a following or a bit of a, you know, reputation, the media personality sort of thing. But sometimes when they are helping out in a local parish, people don't even know who he is. And he's not, like, famous priest. He's just that priest who comes and does mass. Yeah. So it's kind of funny.
I really, really like Father Pinto. He exudes the joy of Christ. Like,
yeah.
He's always got a smile on his face. He's just exudes joy. Not happiness, but joy.
Yes.
Like, he is just joyful, filled with joy and love, and he just makes me feel like I'm full of joy too. I know he had a really good homily today, and I was like nodding along and going, "Oh, this is great." And it did not enter into my long-term memory, though.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it didn't go into long-term memory.
There was not much to remember from Father Kelly's homily. So, except the at the end of it, he said, you know, that it was about the little girl who had died, but they brought Jesus, and he said, she's not dead, she's just asleep, and takes her by the hand, says, Talitha kum. Which means little girl, arise. And then she got up and he gave her something to eat. And it's in Father Kelly's homily, the end of it was, and so everyone, we learn what everyone knows is when a kid feels sick, just give him something to eat and they'll feel better. Like, no. I'm not sure that's the lesson of the gospel, and B, that's not true.
She was dead.
She was dead.
If Jesus hadn't been there, giving her food wouldn't have fixed the problem.
Oh, so anyway,
I really like today's gospel. It's one of those ones that I've read over and over again and really thought about. One of the things that's intriguing to me that I'm not sure I have an answer to yet, though, is that so we have two healings, the woman with the hemorrhage and the daughter of the synagogue official who's died. And the woman with the hemorrhage has had the hemorrhage for 12 years, and the little girl is 12 years old, which is, I think, a really interesting synchronicity there.
Hmm.
That's a good point. It makes you wonder. I mean, one of my thoughts is, could the woman with the hemorrhage, like, be the girl's mom who's been hemorrhaging since her birth?
Huh.
Because a hemorrhage it could be that, like, she had something tear when she gave birth and she's been suffering for 12 years. Either way, there's a little interesting sort of something going on with those two stories and the way they interconnect, because you have the synagogue official approaches Jesus and Jesus is on his way to his house. And then we interrupt that story with the story of the woman who touches Jesus's garment and, you know, who touched me. And then after Jesus has resolved that, then the servants come up and they say, the girl's dead. Don't bother.
Don't bother. You know, it's interesting because they're both about, it's the power of faith that heals. Have faith. So the woman doesn't even ask Jesus to heal her. It's literally, she has faith that Christ has the power to heal her. That's what heals her. He doesn't have to have an intentionality about it. He feels the power go out of him and says, "Who has touched my clothes?" And the disciple said, "Seriously? Like, look at this crowd. Everybody's touching your clothes." And he's like, "No, no, no. Who touched me?" And the woman fesses up. "It's me."
Well, the interesting thing, too, is that according to Jewish law, if she's bleeding, she is unclean and she should not be touching him. Like, right. To touch him would be to
make him unclean.
But of course, what happens is the opposite. She reaches out and touches him. And instead of her uncleanliness making him unclean,
Jesus can't be made unclean.
And so the opposite happens. She is made clean.
Well, Jesus is
healed.
Jesus is the principle of what cleans. He is the embodiment of cleaning, and not like he's, you know, Mr. Spick and Span or
Mr. Clean with the bald head.
Mr. Clean. He's not Mr. Clean. No, but he's the principle of, or to put it another way, reconciliation of us being made right with God. And so that is symbolic is made real in that case where the hemorrhage, which causes her to be unclean, is ended so that she is now cleaned both physically, but also spiritually. Like when we go to confession and we receive absolution, we are cleaned, our soul is cleaned. And that's the same thing because Jesus is what cleans us. It's not like it's a magic power. I think that's the temptation, is to treat it like he felt his power go out of him, like he was being drained of mana and needs to be recharged by drinking a plus one potion of magic,
right?
D&D, you know? No. It's the best way to put it is he feels the power of the spirit entering into someone, the power of her faith being enlightened, the power of someone being cleaned.
But one of the things that strikes me too about the story of the woman with the hemorrhage is that she is almost dead because she cannot serve her family. She can't cook and serve food.
Right.
She is.
Well, and she has spent all that she had. That's what it says.
Right. So she's been for 12 years. She's been basically an exile from her family, from her community. She can't go to prayer services in the synagogue or the temple. Like, she is outside of society, and she has spent everything she has to try to find healing. So not only for healing of her body, but also this like rupture between herself and her family and her community. And she's just like, she's at her wit's end. She is so desperate. And 12 years, I mean, that's so long.
Mm.
And I mean, one of the things about like the girl, it's like, that's a lifetime. That's like how long this little girl's been alive.
Right. Well, it was her entire lifetime until she died.
Right.
The other thing that is interesting is Jesus comes in to the house and, you know, there's a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And he says, "Why are you all freaking out? She's not dead. She's asleep." And they ridiculed him. And he's like, "Everybody out. Hit the road. Everybody out." And you get the sense that they were there like the professional wailers, you know, the banshees in Ireland, like the people who come and to any house where someone has died and they wail professionally.
The Keeners?
The Keeners? Oh, no. Yeah.
Banshees are
something else.
Ghosts.
I know. The Keeners. Yeah. Right. Anyway. And he's like, "Little girl, wake up, get up." And she woke up, and which is kind of like when he healed Peter's mother-in-law, you know, "Arise." And she got up and served them, made a meal, because that's what mother-in-laws do.
Whereas here she gets up and
they feed her.
They give her
he says, "Give her something to eat," which is eating is in after someone has returned from the dead is a thing. You know what I mean? Because Jesus does this when he greets the apostles on the shore of the Sea of Galilee and they give him some fish to eat. He eats some fish. "I'm not a ghost." And by giving her some food, he's saying she's not a ghost. She's alive. Like, it's a don't treat her like she's not a zombie. She's not the undead. She's not a ghost. She's really alive again. Give her something to eat. Yeah, that's your proof.
Right.
So I thought that was a nice little detail there as well. So I guess we did have something to say about it.
I guess so.
So one last thing that came up that we found out yesterday, literally yesterday, was that we're getting a new pastor. Our beloved Father Michael, who the Nigerian priest who's from the Society of Missionaries of Africa, is leaving in September, apparently. But I only found out because one of my friends, priest friends, is becoming our pastor. Father Matt Westcott is going to be pastor of our parishes, which is great. I love Father Matt.
I'm going to miss Father Michael.
But I'm going to miss Father Michael.
Sad.
Yeah, he's been really good. He's been so welcoming and accommodating for our family, all the families. He's gone, gosh, he's so tireless in his work for the parish. I mean, really has been a real father figure. So it is a loss for us. But Father Matt's great. Father Matt's a Marine. He's a Marine chaplain now, like in the reserves. He was an active duty Marine before he became a priest. Drives a motorcycle. He has a Harley. He's cool. He's cool. He's fun for Father Chips. So I'm looking forward to seeing him around and working with him. He might, have stuff for me to help him with, which would be fine. I'd be glad to help him out. All right.
You're going to get roped in.
Yeah, I am going to get roped in. But we have gone through so many pastors over the years. I was saying to the kids, since we've moved here in the last 12 years, we had Father Riley, Father Curry, then Father Matt was the administrator. Father Matt Williams was the administrator for a while. Then Father Boudreau. Then we went over to Brockton, and then it was Father Rake, and then Father Matt, Michael, and then now coming up, Father Matt Westcott. That's 7 priests.
And 8 since we've been married, because
we had Father Murphy in Salem. Yes. So just but in the 12 years we've lived here, we've had 8, we will have had 8 different pastors so far. I don't know what it is. They just keep taking them away. Anyway, I think that should do it. We do want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Andrew T., Michael H., Dominic M., Martin C., and Vicky W. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So if you have any feedback for us, you can let us know what you think of any part of our discussion by commenting at sqpn.com/bets, that's BETTS, or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And we'll have links in our show notes for all the things we talked about at sqpn.com. Follow Raising the Bets on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or at the SQPN YouTube channel, where you should make sure to hit the bell to get notifications. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.